Agenda today in an abbreviated session because of the joint session to be held later on. But Senator Co-Chair Wilken is here, Senator Stedman, and Senator Dyson. I'm Senator Green, and we'll go ahead and begin the hearing. And if you'll open up House Bill 307, that file, and being distributed now is the letter of intent that we had talked about when we originally heard the bill. And I would like to read that, and I'll move the letter of intent. And it is the intent of the 24th Alaska State Legislature that the Department of Natural Resources evaluate instituting user fees to pay the long-term costs for management and necessary facilities associated with the public use of the Kinnick public use area established under House Bill 307. The department should consider such fees as a component of a management plan that will be prepared under AS 4123190. Are there any questions about that? Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm still opposed to implementation of this fee structure.
Okay.
Either in intent language or directly in the bill.
Okay. So you oppose the letter of intent?
Correct.
Okay. Senator Stedman. I mean, Senator Wilken, I'm sorry. I'm looking at you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I should have looked at you. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Senator Stedman, I think the piece there that perhaps gives me comfort is the word evaluate. So, and I would, when I read that, I say they're going to come back for some sort of approval. And so it doesn't say that we approve them. We just want to evaluate them to see what they would put in place and come back. That's the way I read it.
It's a very unwieldy area in which to institute what would be a traditional, you get to the park entry and you pay $10 or $12 to enter. It's not going to be that. For one thing, this is not a park. And it's very different. It's an open area that has many entries. And it's going to be very hard. But if there were some way that in the community or in, they could sell a use fee for the a bumper, a sticker or a card, or much like the provision we had for the wildlife. Watchable wildlife type certificate. We tried several times to get through that we never did. I mean, this is not an easy thing to implement. But it is worth the discussion. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate what I think you're trying to accomplish here. I guess I'd like to know what the sponsor's view to the letter of intent is.
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, after discussing, for the record, my name is Ben Mulligan, staff to Representative Stoltz. After talking with Representative Stoltz, he's comfortable with the language saying that they will evaluate instituting the fee structure. Is that is not saying that they will, but they will look at it through the management plan, and if at such time they do find that out, we will go back and address that issue.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Bundy, have you read? You created it.
Yes, ma'am. Hello. Thank you. And I just point out a couple of places where it does work in the Anchorage area. The Cross Country Ski Club sells a little pin, and by doing that they generate money to maintain their trails. Mm-hmm. And it is admittedly voluntary, but there's a lot of peer pressure also, and so it works in that fashion, and they do create enough money to take care of their maintenance. Point out that we have a snowmobile registration fee that not everyone complies with, but the monies that are generated are aimed at snowmobile trails. Mm-hmm. So there is some history where it indeed could work. There will be scoff laws, but obviously they are creating the problem to start with. If everyone was a responsible user of that area, we wouldn't be having this discussion. However, I think if folks have some buy-in, they will be less tolerant of the scoff laws, and so the money accomplishes two things. It helps care for the area, and it gives people ownership.
Thank you very much. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I'm not interested in setting a precedence here that could go far beyond the narrow area of this watershed where we could eventually be faced with either direct user fees or some kind of a sticker either on your automobile or your all-terrain vehicle or on your boat to come in and access state, and or I'd hate to even see it implemented by the U.S. Forest Service in Southeast Alaska, where we try to, or we're put in a position where we have to start paying to recreate and hunt and fish. So I'm adamantly opposed to this language, and I think it will diminish its ability to get across the floor. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah. And just in response, point out that the small boat registration fee, it's too late. That is here already. And we have two ways of paying things, the users, or we can take it out of the general fund and ultimately out of all of people's money. So we are already paying for our recreation. It's just we're not paying it directly.
Another place it might come from? Is there?
There is another area, but it escapes me at the moment.
Okay, very good. I thought perhaps you might have. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, just in response to Senator Stedman's comments, for at least this last century, hunters and fishermen have fairly cheerfully paid their hunting and fishing licenses, knowing that that provides for the research and the management of the resources. And I appreciate the hunter-fisher community doing that and doing it pretty cheerfully. And I do not see that this sets a precedent, and this is very different situation than that. And we're not asking people to, quote, pay for their recreating. We're trying to figure out a way that we can limit the damage and pay the cost of what it will take to police it. And it's as you have said, Madam Chair, it's a very difficult area.
Very difficult.
And this is if not brilliant, at least a very well thought out first step towards it. And I'm appreciative to the sponsors.
And if it weren't in such close proximity to where people live, it would be very, very different. But that's, you are bringing a great deal of interest into conflict here, and we're trying to, as best we can, to eliminate that. So, Senator Stedman, are you objecting to
the
letter of intent?
Yes.
Okay. And Senator Stedman, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess one of the things I want to make clear of it, since I'm not really familiar with the area, is that if there is a user fee, does this deter the nuisance behavior or downright lethal behavior of some of the people that are out there discharging firearms in an unwise manner?
Well, that's hope that with the funding under contractual, that there will be able to be people hired to be sort of caretakers, care watchers on shifts at various times during the particularly heavy use, which would be evenings and weekends, and to stop the illegal activity. And you know, in some way, in future, that may need to be paid for, because this is not an area that is usually paid for out of general funds. This is an exception, because it is such a unique area and so heavily used by 95% of the people, completely legally, respectfully, and they come in and they do cleanup, they do all the community-minded things they can, even though they don't live there. But there's another 5-10% who are, as Senator Bundy put, just scofflaws, and will probably, even with this and someone chasing him around, may not change much of their behavior, but at least we'll have a system in place where peer pressure might bring some. This is just an attempt, and it certainly will, you know, bear further scrutiny. Robin, would you take the roll, please, on the letter of intent?
Senator Bundy?
Yes.
Senator Stedman?
No.
Senator Dyson?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
No.
Senator Wilkin?
Yes. Yes.
Senator Kennedy?
Yes.
5 yea, 2 nay.
So the letter of intent is adopted, and we have closed public comment on this bill, and I'm content to pass it out of committee at this point. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I move that we pass HB 307, Knick River Public Use Area, out of committee.
With the letter of intent.
With the letter of intent.
Thank you very much.
And whatever fiscal note it's got.
Thank you very much. With there being no objection, House Bill 307 moves out of committee with revised fiscal note and the letter of intent and individual instructions, signatures. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee
Thank
members.
Thank you, Ben, for a job well done. You handled that very well, and we appreciate your work. Brief at ease. Come back on the record. Welcome. Regarding House Bill 57, sale of state land to adjacent landowners.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Terry Harvey, Representative Wyrock's office. We've been working with the Department of Natural Resources, Director of Lands, and we're here to address a statute situation where an Alaskan landowner may find themselves in a very unique position of owning property that completely surrounds a relatively small state property, in this case 20 acres or smaller. DNR has not been in a position to do a direct negotiated sale to said landowner who would be in this position, and basically it is a unique situation. If there's no access to the state property, it's a difficult position for the state to be able to make a sale to anyone that would be interested in the property. We bring before you an example of an individual in Haines, and we've been working with Representative Thomas on this issue, a gentleman there who's been developing a bit of land there for a mining operation that would be open to the public for the last 30 years, and finds himself, his property completely surrounding an 11-acre mining claim from pre-statehood days that went back to state ownership. And we feel strongly that an individual in this situation should be allowed to work directly with the state and taking the burden off of the landowner to have to go through the usual process of advertising and staking and the survey work. So we have with us today to give us any technical support and overview of how a situation like this can exist, Mr. Milius of Lands, Director, DNR. We also have with us Sarah Gilbertson from Fish and Game, who we worked with to address any potential public access issues that may arise were the state to engage in a sale to an individual. Mr. Schnabel is with us off net as well to just give us an idea of what he's been challenged with. So with that, we appreciate your consideration here today.
Thank you. Senator Bundy.
Does it say that this land doesn't have to be surveyed, though?
I believe Mr. Milius can give us the overview on what the procedure would be. I assume there would be a survey, but in a direct negotiated sale here, the advertising and all the different requirements that would be required by, say, someone in Mr. Schnabel's position would not be there.
Madam Chair, if I might, are there any other, it's a pretty unique situation where you have a piece of state land surrounded by private property, are there any other similarly situated landowners that you know of?
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, we believe there's other cases similar to this statewide. We do not have any examples that we know of at this time.
It seems like it's kind of pushing the edge of special interest legislation here if there's only one piece of property like this.
But is this what is known as an in-holding?
I believe so, ma'am.
It's sort of a reverse in-holding.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah. Because I know there are lots of in-holdings in the state where access issues, you know, access becomes an issue. Well, are there any other questions of the sponsor staff? Let's go to Dick Milius, and maybe if we have any other questions or if he can answer your question, Senator Bundy. Dick Milius?
Senator Green and members of the Finance Committee, my name is Dick Milius. I'm the director of the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Mining, Land, and Water. And can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. I'll just give a brief overview of this. This is referred to as a preference rights change to our preference rights statutes. As you know, in most instances, when the state sells land, we sell it through a competitive process that gives all Alaskans an equal chance to purchase it. Preference rights are the exception to that, which is when we allow a sale specifically to one individual, and it's a negotiated sale, and it's usually for somebody that currently occupies the land legally and has significant investments, or in the case that we were looking at with this situation, a situation where the private landowner would own all the land around this parcel and there's no feasible access, but we have no way of selling it to them. If we sold it to a public sale, it's a piece of land that the general public really, or that a purchaser other than the person who owns the surrounding land really couldn't use it because they don't have good access to it, and they're surrounded by lands that are owned by the private individual, and he kind of controls access into the area. And so this would allow us to deal just with that person. The sale, we'd still have to do a best interest finding, which is one of the changes that was made to this bill when it was in the House, was to actually move it to one of our existing preference rights statutes, which allows us to sell parcels that are remnant parcels of state land that are otherwise unusable. One of the qualifications in that existing preference rights statute is that it has to be below the minimum lot size within a municipality. And this is within the Haynes Borough, but is above the minimum lot size. So under the current preference rights statute, this particular parcel, we couldn't sell it because it's too big to fit under that existing statute. The parcel would be sold, though we'd have to do best interest finding to make sure we weren't giving away a parcel that was important for public access. It would have to be surveyed and it would have to be appraised. The parcel we're looking at that triggered this statute, though, up in Haynes actually is already surveyed, so the survey's taken care of, but it would still need to be appraised, and so the sale would be at fair market value. I think we've briefly described the situation that triggered this statute, which is up at Haynes, where there is a parcel that's totally surrounded by land that a Mr. Schnabel owns, and this parcel has no access into it. There is a trail into it, but it doesn't have the kind of access that would allow it to be developed by a private individual if we sold it competitively. In terms of whether or not it applies to other parcels, it certainly could apply to other parcels in the state. We are not aware of specific parcels, but you know, in a state as big as Alaska, with the state owning as much land as it owns, there are likely to be other situations where this could come up, and we could use this statute to allow those kind of sales. And so with that, I'll take any questions the committee members might have.
Are there any questions for Mr. Milius? Yes, Senator Bundy.
Just a general question. You said if someone sold, someone else bought this in holding, they wouldn't have access. Isn't there a law that says that people, you have to give people access to land if they buy it? Doesn't there have to be some kind of right of way?
Senator, through the chair, there is a law that if we sell land, we're supposed to make sure it has legal access. And so that's a requirement imposed on us, but there is no requirement that a private landowner has to give access to somebody that, if they're the only way to access that parcel is through their land, I don't believe there's any law that says they have to give them access. It's basically the private landowner, the purchaser would have to negotiate with the private owner. But like I said, in this case, I'm actually not sure if it's actually law, but it's always been our policy that we don't sell land, state land, unless there's adequate legal access to it.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and RS-2477 doesn't play into this?
Senator, there actually is an RS-2477 route through this parcel, or Actually, it hasn't been surveyed, so we're not sure if it actually goes through the parcel. It would provide trail access. One of the problems with RS 2477 is, though, it's not unlimited access, and we're not sure that the RS 2477 access through this parcel would be sufficient to allow it to be developed. There are restrictions on an RS 2477 trail, and this one has not actually been established. It's recognized under state law, but it hasn't been recognized by the courts. So at this point, it's kind of, you can't really rely on that as the legal access for a sale because, like I say, there are restrictions on it, and it's not recognized by the court yet.
Okay, thank you. And Madam Chair, has this been through our Judiciary Committee?
Yes.
It has. And so they would have addressed the concern that it was special interest legislation.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It went through resources,
but it hasn't been to Judiciary. So, I understand this gentleman's problem, but it is really passing law specifically for one person, even though we say there's a general application. If there's no other lands that were similarly situated, we.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a concern. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Stedman.
Yes, Madam Chairman. Maybe we could have a little further explanation on Senator Bundy's question earlier on the response seemed to be a little lacking in that there was no mention of prescriptive easements, which I think gets to the point of accessing in holdings. And I was wondering if, and not even beyond even in holdings, just accessing across property that's privately or otherwise owned. I was wondering if from the department we could get a little explanation on prescriptive easements and if one may apply to this parcel.
Dick, can you give us some information on that?
Senator Stedman, through the chair, I will qualify by saying I'm not an expert on prescriptive easements, but a prescriptive easement, as I understand it, needs to be acknowledged also by the court, and you have to basically have, I believe it's like 7 years of or 7 or 10 years of actual documented use that, you know, that somebody's used that across private property and that private property owners never tried to block that access. And so you basically have to go through court to do that, and nobody's done that through that. I mean, if we, I guess the state could pursue something like that to try to establish that, but that would be a very time-consuming, expensive process to get access to this parcel. And we don't know what it would be, you know, how that would, what the outcome of that would be.
Does that answer your question, Senator Shedman?
Yes, it does. And if I recall correctly from the Resources Committee, the subject matter of other parcels had come up, and they didn't really have an inventory. And mm-hmm. They figured that there's other parcels like this scattered around the state, but they didn't have a good handle on how many.
Well, I would have to assume that there would definitely be other parcels where you've had road construction and you've had things go in where you've left little odd angled shapes of land in some of these developments or whatever that come along and are just that extra piece that you really don't need for either of the pieces. Are there any other questions on this? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm not sure who to direct this to, but I noticed that in the previous committee it was recommended that there be an amendment done by by Senator Seekins. I was wondering if that concern was addressed.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, we, after the committee, after this had passed through the committee, we understood there was a concern from Senator Seekins addressing any legal issues, but within the committee, there was no mention of any amendment to my knowledge there.
Do you remember what the concern was?
He was concerned about the difference between a preference sale, a direct preference sale to an individual, based on how sales normally would unfold in a situation where there was a public sale of state property. And he also was not privileged to some of the earlier testimony from Mr. Milius, who I believe addressed that concern earlier in the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I think the important thing, though, is it says the director may convey to an adjoining landowner for its fair market value a remnant of land that the director considers unmanageable or a parcel of a land created by a highway right-of-way alignment or realignment, or a parcel created by the vacation of a state-owned right-of-way if the parcel is smaller than 20 acres and is completely enclosed by property owned by the adjacent landowner. The director does not have to do this. He may do this if he, and then, and of course, they talked about best interest findings, and it's in the best interest of the state, and it's at fair market value. So it's not a mandate that they must dispose of the property.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Also, we do have Ms. Gilbertson here with Fish and Game that helped us work with an amendment that addressed public access type issues that may be of concern to the state. So if necessary, she'd be glad to address that with us.
Okay, Sarah, you want to come help us through that, please?
Good morning. For the record, my name is Sarah Gilbertson. I'm Special Assistant to the Commissioner at Fish and Game. And we are aware of several other parcels, although I don't know them by name, throughout the state where this bill, if passed, could come into play. And so, some of those parcels are state-owned land that is adjacent to a waterway, be it a stream or a river. And the surrounding landowner is either private or federal. And so our main concern was that Alaskans are able to access the water. As the bill was previously written, this new language was down below. It was added in as a number 11. And we were very concerned that we preserve access in the way that we, after talking to the Department of Law and Rep. Wyrock's office, the way that we all agreed upon to accomplish that goal was to bring this language up under 7B. So there would have to be a best interest finding so that an issue such as access to waterways would have to be considered. So that's what we worked on.
So that helped you in your deliberations about this land, about this issue. Are there other questions? Well, since we've lost our committee, we'll take a brief at ease. Thank you. No problem passing this out with all the May language and the very fair market value, et cetera, and the best interest findings. I think it'll be a well-considered issue before it's ever done. We do have John Schnabel on the line, but John, it doesn't sound like there are any questions for you, so would you rather testify or have us pass it out of committee?
Would you like me to comment on this issue?
Go right ahead.
Thank you. Well, my name is John Schnabel. I've been here in Alaska since 1939 in Haines, and believe it or not, I've been attempting to purchase piece of land since 1980. And there's been so much difficulty, and I've had several attorney firms work on this for me. But I own the 84 acres of land that surrounds this 13 acres that's being considered for purchase. And I've, in the past, had to buy leases and lands from the state through outcry auction, and every time that it's been done, I put up all the costs of the survey, advertising, et cetera, and everybody else had a privilege to come in and bid against me and not have to do a damn thing to get the parcel put up for sale. But I'm in the process of developing the 84 acres that surrounds this into a tourist destination as a wilderness experience and gold panning. I've been mining this property for 22 years. But I don't want a conflicting activity within my facility that I'm setting up for the tourists, otherwise it'll interfere with their enjoyment of the trip, depending on what the person might do to the 13 acres if they were the successful bidder. And I've invested over $1 million in this project to bring it into the tourist picture, and if this bill were to be passed, I think it would give everybody confidence that my future here would be secure.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Wilkin, can I get a motion, please?
Madam Chair, my apologies for having to step out for a moment.
No problem.
I would move that the committee report out House Bill 57 with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
There being no objection, House Bill 57 moves from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal notes. Thank you. HB 419, an act repealing the Board of Storage Tank Assistance, the Underground Storage Tank Revolving Loan Fund, etc. And we do have Department of Law online to testify.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Karen Lidster, and I am staffed representative John Coghill. Just a brief background. In 1990, the Alaska State Legislature passed HB 220 and created the State Underground Storage Tank Program. With that, they also created the Storage Tank Assistance Fund. It was a grant program, and to review the grant applications that would come in and establish the priority, the Board of Storage Tank Assistance was part of that HB 220 that was passed. In 1990, EPA's deadline on this program and getting the underground storage tanks removed was ended, and the loan program then was established as a storage tank revolving loan fund in 2002. The grant program was extremely successful. When the fund then became a revolving loan fund, there were no applications for any money. And with that, we have a Board of Storage Tank Assistance that basically really had nothing that they needed to oversee. So HB 419 is going to request a modification for the end date for the board in order to be consistent with the end date for the formal termination of the loan program, and basically will remove some statutes and regulations that are no longer necessary.
Are there any questions? Senator Bundy.
Just so I understand, there were applications when this was a grant program. Were all the tanks taken care of, or did the applications just stop when the grants went away and this became a loan program?
Well, in the audience, I have Larry Dietrich, who is the director of the oil response, and I think he might be able to give you the exact information as far as the grants, where I'm not sure if any further grants came in.
So you want to come forward?
Address that.
Madam Chair, I guess the thrust of my question is, are there more storage tanks that need to be cleaned up and they're just not doing it because it's a loan, or have we cleaned them up all of them?
Welcome.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Larry Dietrich. I'm with the Department of Environmental Conservation, Division of Spill Prevention and Response. And Senator Bunnity, through the chair, at the beginning of the program, there were approximately 7,000 tanks in the state of Alaska. The legislature over the years has appropriated a total of about $43 million that has resulted in the removal of about 6,000 of those tanks. We have something less than 1,000 left in the state now that have all been upgraded in accordance with the new requirements, and hopefully in theory are no longer leaking. So it was a very significant program, had a substantial end result, and we hopefully won't have to deal with an underground pollution threat from these new tanks any longer. Did that answer your question, or
is that satisfactory?
If I might, then the deteriorated tanks have been eliminated.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Are there other questions, Senator Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. You say the tanks have been eliminated, or they're just not being used anymore?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, of the roughly 7,000 at the beginning of the program, about 6,000 have actually been removed, taken out of service, and eliminated. So the total inventory of tanks, has been reduced by about 6,000.
Madam Chair, if I could, and this program was just for underground storage tanks or above-ground storage tanks as well?
Senator Olson, through the chair, just for underground storage tanks.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there other questions? Senator Hoffman.
So you're saying if we had a grant program for underground storage tanks, we would get no applicants?
Yes, Senator Hoffman, through the chair, the grant program was terminated by the legislature in June 2004.
I understand.
And then the loan program continued, and it's the loan program that for which we have not received any applications.
That wasn't my question.
I'm sorry.
My question was, if we had a grant program today, we would get no applications.
Senator Hoffman, if the grant program was as it was originally designed, which is to remove tanks that did not meet the EPA standards, in theory, that's correct. In theory, all of those tanks have been upgraded, and therefore they would not need a grant.
I don't think you're believing that, Senator Hoffman, somehow.
Madam Chair, I would join him in the disbelief that if there wasn't a free lunch, there wouldn't be someone out standing in the line.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, sir. I'm kind of encouraged, though, that we're kind of ending an era. Senator Wilken, do you remember
Madam Chair, I just wanted to know if Senator Torgerson was going to testify. Those are the good old days.
No, that was quite the lively discussion, I tell you. Someone else had their hand up. I'm sorry. No, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This underground storage tank, is that just for petroleum products, or what about water tanks that are underground?
Yes, Senator Olson, through the chair, that was just for petroleum.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there other questions? Does anyone object to ending an era? Did you have any further comments, Senator Hoffman? You look like you're trying to say something.
No, I'm done.
Senator Wilken.
Madam Chair, on behalf of ex-Senator Torgerson, I move to report House Bill 419 for committee with individual recommendations and attach zero fiscal note.
The John Torgerson Honorary House Bill 419.
The Targonator continues.
With individual recommendations and accompanying zero fiscal notes. I'm sorry, Mr. Tostevin, we just didn't get to you, but we've finished off our agenda today, so you are given a break. That concludes our calendar for today, and we are adjourned. I believe our